The title for today's message is Gravity. Gravity. Why did that brick fall? Why didn't it float up like a balloon? Some of you think that was a really stupid question. You're thinking, of course it fell, it's heavy. Well, the International Space Station is much, much heavier. Yet it's up there. Water is 8 pounds per gallon. The average cumulus cloud is air and water. It weighs 1.1 million pounds. That's a fact. Why is it floating? So was it a stupid question? Why doesn't that 550-ton cloud fall down, come to the ground? The brick did. Time to go to class. Planetary Science 101 today. The answer to these conflicting realities is gravity. When God created the earth and heavens, as we read in Genesis chapters 1 and 2, God had already determined what the earth needed so that it could be the perfect habitat for man. He knew that physics such as chemistry and electricity and the synchronicity of the heavens for the planets and stars and their moons, and gravity. Gravity has its plus sides, but it has its downsides too. Lightning, when it comes out, produces nitrogen, and the rain brings that nitrogen down, and vegetation loves that. It is healthier than just regular water. But lightning can kill, it can start fires, and it can fry power grids. Gravity is invisible, just like God. We cannot deny its existence, just like we cannot deny God's existence. It's ever present, and gravity is ever present. Gravity is invisible, just like God. Gravity wants to pull you down, yet God wants to pull us up to Himself. There's much to learn from these forces that God created when He made the earth. If there was no gravity, then consider in Genesis chapters 1, verses 20 through 21, when He created the birds, the fowl of the sky, and the fish of the sea. The birds and bees would not be able to fly because there'd be no gravity to hold them down. They just float off to space. That means that there'd be no pollination. Vegetation, vegetables, flowers, which means no non-meat-eating animal could survive. It means no vegetation would ever reproduce, so everything green would die. And then that means that all the meat-eating animals would starve because the herbivores are now all gone in major part of their diet. So no animals. What does man eat? Vegetation and animals. And if that's not enough, vegetation is unique in that it provides oxygen on the planet. It is the producer of oxygen, whether it's vegetation in the sea, plankton, or on land. So that means without vegetation, man would starve, asphyxiate, and die. So we see gravity is intrinsically vital. What about all that swim in the sea? That is a food source. What effect would the absence of gravity be for them? The only thing holding water on land and in the oceans is gravity. The only reason it has weight is because of the pull of gravity. The only reason water flows is still gravity. Remove the gravity and all the water flows up into space, evaporates in the vacuum, leaving all that lived in the sea gasping for their final breaths. God thought all of this through before he began the actual creation. He had to come up with the perfect plan. And so we see the perfection in the divine forethought that God had. He knew it required a force to be created that would sustain the entirety of creation, as I just example. It had to sustain. God intentionally made man to be the peak of that creative perfection, because to man was given the dominion of all the creatures. Genesis 1:26. To man was given the authority to judge the world. When we become saints, we're not only judging the world, we're judging angels. That's 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verses 2 through 3. And to man was given the responsibility to tend and work the Garden of Eden. Genesis 2, verse 15. But because Adam and Eve fell, think gravity, they lost that God-given responsibility in the Garden of Eden and thusly were banished from it. So God sees through all time. And so even though when he created Adam, he saw in the future what would happen, still, our wonderful God, before he formed Adam, he had already decided what would be required for the rest of humanity that followed Adam. God custom made this world, not just specifically for Adam, but for all of us. The glue that holds our earth together is gravity. The pull of gravity is analogous to a weight that pulls you down. Imagine a lead suit on you. If gravity didn't exist, neither would we. The bottom line. The pull of gravity, being a weight, can also be considered a mass. We're going to talk about mass several times. Matthew 18, verse 6, you don't have to turn. Matthew 18, verse 6 talks about a different great weight, and that's the millstone. Doesn't matter what the weight is. Its effect and its mass would spiritually not only weigh you down, but it will also destroy you. So where is the spiritual connection here? Let's do an experiment. I have two empty Tupperwares, I call them Tupperwares. Each one of these weighs 1 ounce. Now, I am going to take a potato that weighs 3 ounces. It goes into one of these. So we got 1 ounce versus 3 ounces. I drop them both at the same time from the same height. Who's going to land first? This one's heavier on the right. That's why this is here. Sorry. Oh, I don't know if I can reach you. Ready? What do you expect is going to happen? How many think the heavier is going to hit? Nobody. The same time. Galileo Galilei, in early 1600s, he was an Italian astronomer, physicist, and engineer. 425 years ago, he debunked Aristotle's analysis that the speed of falling objects is directly proportional to its mass, to its weight. We just dropped two different masses, yet they landed at the same time. So Galileo disproved Aristotle. The story goes that he used the Leaning Tower of Pisa, you can put that on the screen, to drop two lead balls of very different weights, think mass, from the top edge of the tower to show there is no relationship of mass of weight to the downward speed, think gravity, of those lead balls. So Aristotle's on this side, I'm looking backwards at that, and Galileo with the two balls equal height from the ground versus Aristotle's. And so 65 years later, Isaac Newton used Galileo's framework of motion to expand upon, and he created Newtonian physics. That's not a part of this sermon. Gravity does not care whatever it is that is falling to the center of its pull. Again, let's make that spiritual parallel, that the pull of gravity is the power by which Satan tries to pull us in. And he pulls us into his self-manipulated black hole that he created on Earth. God's mass is greater than Satan's mass. We must be grounded in God's Holy Spirit and allow God to pull us into his center. Satan doesn't want us to be pulled by God to God's center, because that puts us out of reach. And we're going to cover distance regarding out of reach. God's pulling us upward. Satan's pulling us downward. In the New King James, 2 Corinthians chapter 10 verse 4 reads, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds." So what God is saying here is that he is the weapon by which Satan's strongholds will fall down. Satan doesn't want us to be closer to God by God's gravity, because Satan hates us. He hates the fact that we're going to have the position that he has strived for. He seeks his nature because he doesn't want to live side by side with God. He wants to take his place. That's the motivation. So another way we can view gravity is it's the strength, the force between two objects. Let's redefine what those two objects are. We're going from physical objects to spiritual objects. Simply put, sin and no sin. The pull between them. The world and the Holy Spirit. The pull between them. If we can consider God's Spirit as the center of his throne, then God's gravity is pulling us toward closeness with himself. So if we choose to not fight against Satan's gravity that's pulling us away from that closeness, rather than to fight for God's gravity, then we will be crushed by the world. It takes effort to get away from God. That effort is called rebellion. And the greater our rebellion, then the further away we become from God. If we continue to resist the pull of God's force, his gravity, and that would be us intentionally getting away from God. If we don't put up that resistance, it's intentional on our part. We've made a choice. Hebrews 10, verse 26. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 26. If we deliberately keep on sinning after we have received the knowledge of the truth, no sacrifice for sins is left. Only a fearful expectation of judgment and of raging fire that will consume. So far, we've only talked about one kind of gravitational pull, the one that pulls down. But there's another side of gravity, and that's a gravity that pulls up. I said a gravity that pulls up. What might that be? God's intrinsic interstellar clockworks contains just the right components in order to keep all the celestial bodies in a carefully designed orbit. And the cosmic mechanism by which he does just that is this other kind of gravity that pulls up. Now, you and I do not feel that gravity, but the Earth absolutely feels it. I want you now to think of planets and moons and stars, which are suns, as giant magnets. Please paint a picture in your head of lots of spherical magnets hung from the ceiling by sewing thread that attaches to each magnet. Now, on a thick table over here, is a spherical magnet that is so huge that it takes both your arms to lift and your back to move it from that table to where those much, much smaller spherical magnets are. So we're going to call that giant one the sun. Let's take one of those medium, small spherical magnets, let's paint it blue and call it Earth. I want you to take that blue spherical, and I want you to throw it sideways. And what happens is you get this round orbit that gets slightly smaller every rotation. Now, while it's rotating, take that ginormous magnet, the sun, and bring it closer to the orbiting Earth. What you find is that its pull on Earth changes its orbit. This is that second form of gravity that is pulling upward. The difference is the first one, the location of the gravity is below us, inside the mass that we live on. But the other gravity is coming from outside the Earth. It's the sun trying to pull us to its center. So logic tells us that if that massive sun is pulling on us, why doesn't it suck the whole Earth in? Genesis 1:1 and verses 4 through 8 point to the celestial answer. There had to be a heavens created upon which, as Job 26 verse 7 says, to hang the Earth. We're just talking about celestial magnets on thread to hang the Earth. When you really study gravity, you find out that the sun is not the only influence on the pull of the Earth and its orbit. The other planets also have an effect on the shape of the rotation of our planet. They also help maintain our climate, because this would give you one climate, this gives you very different climate. So they help design the orbit of the Earth for our benefit. God did. In his magnificence, he carefully and intentionally created the orbits of all the planets, and he intended them to have a role in making the Earth a perfect world so that humanity could be cradled and grow and flourish. For example, he created the massive planets Saturn and Jupiter, which are much further from Earth than the Sun is, and yet Jupiter and even Venus both help shape that orbit. Thereby, it makes our gravity more stable. It keeps it in place. But it is ultimately the major force, the sun, that keeps the Earth in place. And it is Jesus Christ, the Son, S-O-N, that keeps you and I in place. This home that he created for us is built upon the foundational forces of the two lights mentioned in Genesis 1 verse 16. The greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. God took that lesser light and he weighed it and he set it at a specific distance from the Earth so that it would tug on our oceans, create tides that would come ashore and bring nutrients to those living things that populated the coastlines. And that the same tides also help repair shorelines that have been damaged. So providing us the holy day calendar is not the only function that God meant for the moon to have. God predetermined the massive size of the sun so that it would keep us from going off into the nethers of space. It helps anchor us. God took that size, calculated the distance from the earth to the sun to make sure we had a conducive temperature to sustain life. Then he calculated in the speed of the rotation of the earth, what it needed to be in order to maintain an orbit that prevents those perfect conditions, the divine stasis. One more calculation, and he determined the tilt of the earth. And that gave us spring, summer, fall, and winter. So now we have seasons and time markers. Genesis 1, verse 14, time markers. So are you seeing now how vital and stunning is the intellect of our Creator, the infinite wisdom, to come up with all this and create it? The importance and the requirement of determining the speed of the earth can be easily demonstrated. It's the number one regulator of the stability of this terrestrial home. You've probably done this when you were a kid. You take a full cup of water and you hold it by the rim, tips of your fingers, and you put it down so that all your arm is above it. And as fast as you can, you do a 360. Now, if you did it correctly, the centrifugal force keeps the content safely in the water, in the cup. If you tried that rotation at a slower speed, that water will come out. Why does it come out? Because it lacks the speed to counteract gravity that's pulling on the water. That force that's keeping the water in the cup, that's counteracting against gravity, that's inertia. God created inertia. It's the tendency of objects that are in motion to stay in motion. This has a spiritual concept parallel for us. Once you are called by God and you begin to move forward in your spiritual journey, then it's easier to keep going forward. But it's when we stop going forward, think sin, then it becomes much harder to get back to moving forward. That's inertia. Let's do a different experiment right now. I have a pad of papers. I'm going to grab two of those papers. Now, in the first experiment, we took two different weights and we dropped them and they hit the ground at the same time. If I take these two papers made of the same material, same size, that means same weight. and I dropped them at the same time, what would happen? So, are we ready to drop it? We're ready to drop it. No, we're not ready to drop it. Because I'm going to do something to make this piece of paper different from this piece of paper. You want to take this, crumble it up. It's not changed, same paper, same weight, same material, but something's changed that in here that has not. Gravity is the downward force that I exerted on the paper. So now it is crushed. Its shape and form are now different. The smooth paper is mankind. Flat and smooth. We started out just like this. But we became like this. When God calls us, Satan gets a whiff. Because Satan sees that we've changed, like a roaring lion, he goes after us. He's not interested in these. He's interested in these because God is involved. First Peter 5:8, read it 1,000 times. Your adversary, the devil, walks like a roaring lion. Satan uses his power, just like I did, to crush this, to reshape us, to deform us. This is what sin does. It deforms us. This is those not yet called. They're not ragged and crumpled as we are. We get this way because we're trying to fight off Satan's fiery darts, trials. His slings and his arrows. But we are God's rough cut diamonds. We're not finished. We're rough cut. We are accepting his shaping of us, allowing him access into our lives, and trusting him as he grinds and cuts our facets to make us not only more beautiful, like a finished diamond, but to make us more valuable to him. So even though Satan has these people, whether by ignorance or temptation, they're not the prey he seeks. So, the world, same weights, why did our shape make us fall quicker, allowing gravity to have a greater effect on us than that flat paper? Let's take that question a spiritual step further. Why does Satan's gravitational pull have a more profound effect on us than the rest of the world? Is there something in common that we should understand? God chose us apart from those flat papers, and in his love, we find our very selves changed. Satan does not want that shape changed because he knows God is changing the shape for us to be in the image of God. Satan does not want that. So he pulls on us all the more knowing that our shape is changing. It's the very nature of our changed shape that allows Satan's gravity to pull us quicker and easier towards his way so that we won't be able to get away. But God intended this to happen. He built this in so that we would build more spiritual muscle. Have to fight against that gravity pulling us down quicker. Since Satan is the prince of the power of the air, Ephesians 2 verse 2, let's see how air fits into this equation. So, what happened actually science-wise? The flat paper had much more surface area. The crumpled paper, now in the shape of a ball, had much less surface area. The air going past the ball hits the tiny part of the ball that faces the ground and then swoops right around it where the flat paper, it's catching all the air. That's friction and drag when the air underneath it pushes up, makes it hard for the gravity to pull down, kind of uses the resistance to resist the pull of gravity. This limited resistance allows the pull of gravity to have a more profound effect on us going downward. Now, there's a spiritual lesson with this resistance that we just talked about. Resistance is another subset of gravity. And this other subset is called terminal velocity. Terminal velocity. And you can't talk about resistance and not talk about terminal velocity. Terminal velocity combines these forces that I've already discussed. And it may sound complicated at first, but a picture is worth 1,000 words, and I prepared a video that Jason will soon show you, and it will make it much easier to understand. I'm going to have it paused 3 times so that you can better understand. This video is of the largest sequential, what do we want to call it? Sequential, a formation, okay? Like military guys march in formation. This is parachuters trying to create a formation. And so they're jumping out of the plane, this large number of people, one, and then the next one, and the next one. So that the first are going to fall to Earth quicker. They're the first ones out. But about those at the end of the line, they're the last to get out. So by the time the last jumpers jump, the first jumpers were so much closer to the ground and dropping faster. Those that jumped last and they first jump out, they're not going the speed of the first jumpers. because it takes time to build up velocity to match the speed of the first jumpers. And remember, this is going to be a formation, which means all the jumpers have to have the same speed. They have to have the same velocity in order to do this formation. A formation is static. It's not this. It's all these guys and gals at the exact same speed as the person next to them. So the question is, how is that first jumper ever going to slow down so that that last jumper is next to him? And vice versa, how's that last jumper going to speed up to the first jumper so they could do the formation? Now we're about to roll that beautiful bean footage. But realize that everybody, if there was a plane so big that, and I don't know how many people this is, 100, if they could all jump out of a plane the exact same time, that's a different story. But this is sequential. All right, Jason, if you'll roll it and stop at 7 seconds. I don't have the right glasses. And Jason, can you take the mouse and circle the two stragglers? Can you all see that? Time's not standing still here. It's ticking away. The biggest difference in time is, of course, between the first and the last jumpers. So those two stragglers at the top, you can visually easily see the vertical height difference from them to the others that jumped far before them. Jason, will you go to 9 seconds? So it's clear. I don't know how many seconds the last one is from those that jumped first. So if you were to jump off a 10-story building, okay? Why you do that, I don't know. But if you were to jump and measure the speed 1 second after you jump, it will be a fraction of the speed when you're eight seconds down, whatever. So that's talking about velocity. It takes time to build up velocity. You slam on the accelerator in your car. Your car can do 100. You're not going to be doing 100. You have to overcome inertia. The fix that God created that addresses this is terminal velocity. It's when the pull of gravity is equal to the resistance from the friction and the drag of a falling object, like these parachuters. It is at this point, at terminal velocity, that the falling object stops accelerating. So if before you reach terminal velocity, you're going 70, 80, 90. But at terminal velocity for a parachuter, is 120 miles an hour. When you hit that, something very different happens. Don't go any faster. Parachuters refer to this as floating. When they jump out of the plane, they immediately feel themselves falling in their stomach and in their brain. It registers. But at terminal velocity, they don't feel that anymore, because gravity and their resistance are equal. The feeling of falling goes away, please play a little more of the video till we see the formation. You can stop it there. So it didn't matter that the first one jumped out, and there's all these seconds and how many feet. First guy didn't have to do a thing. The last jumper, eventually, because this guy can't go no faster, and this guy is going to catch up because he's exponentially dropping, and everybody is at the same level. That's terminal velocity. Satan wants us in a free fall, constantly accelerating towards him. But God created that terminal velocity that allows us to slow down from Satan's pull on us. It makes our spiritual velocity equal to gravity, to Satan's gravity, so that we're actually slowing down as he trials us. This allows us to deploy our spiritual parachute without them ripping off our backs. If we were kept going faster and faster, that parachute pack would rip off your back if you deployed it. We need to understand that God is our parachute. He will not be ripped off our backs, because his divine mercy and his love slow us down from our descent towards Satan. So when we reach spiritual terminal velocity, the friction of our Christian faith equalizes our descent into Satan's desire. When parachuters jump, the front of their bodies faces the earth that they're falling to. This creates tremendous friction. When we fight Satan's pulls, that creates tremendous spiritual friction. We don't just stand a chance. We are promised victory. Another spiritual parallel is that when we get more of the world out of us, then we also begin to slow our descent into sin. Because when you do that, when you take this heaviness and you get rid of it, you fight to get it out of your life, then you're increasing your buoyancy. God's word becomes our buoyancy. And therefore, we're reducing the drag of this world on our lives as a direct result. So the bottom line is, the more air resistance we build underneath ourselves against the prince of the power of the air, the sooner we stop accelerating towards him. We have to increase that air resistance. We witnessed that in experiment number two, because the friction on the flat paper was much greater. Faith is friction. Trials are friction. Friction is our friend. Parachutes are friction. And God is parachute. We can now better understand that you and I, being crumpled papers, unfortunately, we do not have less air resistance. So we are defaulted to falling quicker to Satan's attacks, because we have targets on our back. We have targets. But Satan cannot pull us quicker to him if we choose to use spiritual friction to slow us down. We can cover those targets on our back with God's parachute. Spiritual friction creates a drag upon us that works in a manner that the closer we allow ourselves to get to God, the more spiritual resistance we have against Satan. So consequently, the further apart things are, the less the effect of gravity on the object that is further away. This happens to be Isaac Newton's law of gravity. So if you're spiritually further away from Satan as you get closer to God, then Satan's gravity has a lesser effect on you. And it's more difficult for him to bring you back to himself. But the opposite is also true. When we live a life that is not a way of life that should draw us closer to God, then that means we are actually spiritually closer to Satan than to God. And that gives more power to Satan's gravitational hold. So gravity upholds the proof that it is dangerous to get further away from God than being closer to him. When we merge the spiritual and the physical lessons we learned today, we're able to get a more profound understanding of what's really at play in our daily lives, in our daily choices. When we get further away from Earth and get closer to the temptation of other planets, then their gravity has a greater effect on us than where we were in the point of time when we were not subject to the pull of this other thing. The only way we can secure and stabilize our own spiritual orbits is for you and I to keep our distance from that which wants to pull us in. But at the same time, we have to allow ourselves to be pulled in by that which we should have already been anchored to. You and I can get closer to God if we can increase that air resistance. And by making ourselves more friction resistant spiritually, that makes us more Satan resistant. One final speaking point on gravity has nothing to do with science, because it's a different definition of gravity, and we'd be remiss not to include that. It's the description of a relationship between the mundane and the vital. Rather than something being considered the same old, the relationship almost off of that, opposite of that, is gravity, as in extreme concern, alarming importance, utmost seriousness. So let's touch on that very briefly. It's so easy to exclude that kind of gravity in our lives every day. We wake up, we do the same things, we have a routine. There's no gravity or seriousness in that, is there? Where did that come from? Sure, there are things of seriousness. Don't touch hot stove, put your finger in an outlet. But when does this definition of of gravity come into play for you and me? No? Driving your car without paying attention. Stop paying our bills. Gravity. But what spiritual parallels are there? How about having an affair? Or lying? Or worshiping an idol, as in lusting? Or stealing? Or doing things on the Sabbath that we know we shouldn't be doing? Do they have gravity? Do things such as these fall under the lesser category of the mundane, as in, oh well? Or are they far more serious and deserving of a much higher reevaluation of their urgency in our lives? And if the latter, then we are talking about the gravity of these being more lasting, more alarmingly dangerous situations. What is the gravity of stopping to observe God's holy days? What could be the eventual results of not taking these seriously? The seriousness, the gravity of living our lives that way. What's in play here? What's at stake? Eternal life? Is that not a matter of gravity? The Bible warns us in Hebrews 10, verse 38, "Now the just shall live by faith, but if any man draws back, you're pulling away from God. It's a form of gravity by choice. My soul shall have no pleasure in him." That's regressing. That's backsliding. So what is at stake? Us. We are at stake. That's the gravity. So if you want to make it to the first resurrection, then stay away from the edge of the world. God's gravity keeps us safe. It doesn't beat us down. It's there to uplift us. To keep Satan's pull you down gravity from slamming you and I down to our knees. If we are truly close to God, then we'd be already down on our knees, talking to God regularly. Picture the righteous pull of God drawing us back to him. In our solar system, the only celestial object that has that kind of power is the sun. In the divine system, the only spiritual object that has that kind of power, again, is the Son, S-O-N, Jesus. Of all the scriptures that came to my mind when I was writing this message, none seem more appropriate and directly connected to the theme of gravity than this one. John 12, verse 32. John chapter 12, verse 32, and Jesus is speaking of himself. And he says, "And I, when I am lifted up," this is a gravity term, "when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself." Draw, again, has a gravity connotation. That's divine gravity. God allowed Satan to pull Jesus down into the ground. He was crucified. And in his death, Satan's evil gravity brought Jesus down into the heart, the center of the devil's gravitational pull. Matthew 12, verse 40, Jesus, speaking to the Pharisees, said, "For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the huge fish, So the Son of Man will be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. But the latter part of John 12, verse 32, is where we find victory and the divine anti-gravity powered by God the Father, who pulled Jesus out from the center of Satan's domain, lifted Jesus up and out, anti-gravity. Satan now defeated in this attempt, and the Father installs Jesus rightfully to the center of God's domain and the privilege to sit on the right hand of the Father's throne. So God's gravity is no match for Satan's. How ironic is it that in the end times when Christ returns, Satan is tossed into a bottomless pit. Revelation 20, verse 1, I saw an angel come down from heaven. Verse 2, and he laid hold of the dragon, the old serpent, the devil, Satan, and bound him 1,000 years. Verse 3, and cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up. The irony being that he who pulled mankind down to the center of his own gravity pit is himself tossed deep into his own prison that he kept for others and of now which he has no power or control. He can't escape. What are some action items that we could take besides the big four? Here's a few. Remember the uniqueness of the parallel between physical and spiritual gravity. Don't ever take God's calling of you for granted. Never forget that God is in control. Never forget the pull of Satan's gravity, nor the lift of God's love, nor the pull of God's power and grace and mercy. Satan fears God's gravity because it was that gravity that cast him out from heaven and down to earth. And it was that very force that strips Satan of his power and imprisons him from where he once exerted the most force. So allow God to shape us. Allow his trials. Allow them. Don't fear or fight his trials. Endure. Endure that. Regardless of how difficult it is. The end is worth the present of the trial. Don't fight the decisions he makes in our lives. We can't think beyond where his decision has our best interests focused in the long term. And carefully and often remember the gravity of each of our everyday decisions, moment by moment. Brethren, don't let Satan get you down. Do allow God to lift you up. Decide whose gravity will control your life, your steps, your thoughts. Final scripture, Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. Philippians 4, verse 8. Whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, and praiseworthy, think on these things. So the next time we find ourselves so busy, so concerned during our daily lives, and gravity among so many other things just hardly ever come to mind, let us all make sure that God is not among those.